Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Matt Boyle, fellow Butian, and you're listening to KBMF LP 102.5 FM. Keep that dial turnt right where it is, and it'll be easy listening all night.
Support for KBMF comes from Walla Walla University, School of Social Work and Sociology, offering a two-year Master's in Social Work program, as well as one-year Advanced Standing program for those with BSW. Find more information about earning master's degree in social work in Montana at 1-888-296-7416 or wallawalla.edu. Walla Walla.
Good evening, this is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. It's a beautiful gray day here in Butte, Montana, and our guest this evening is Violeta Villacorta. I bet you're very, very curious about Violeta, and she's got some great stuff to share in just a moment. She's the founder of Org by Vio. We'll be right back, and Vio will introduce herself. Thanks for being with us. This is Heartstock. Welcome again to Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Remember, you can find us on Facebook or email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Our guest this evening is Violeta Villacorta, founder of Org by Vio. Hi, Vio. How are you?
Hi, Carol. I'm great here in the desert of California in 97-degree weather.
Holy mokes.
Very hot.
Well, as you probably know, it's already snowed a couple times here.
Yes.
But we're enjoying a great summer at the end of our fall here. It's been unseasonably warm until it rained.
That sounds great. We need rain.
Yes. Yes. Love the rain. Please share with our listeners who you are and what is Org by Vio.
Well, my name is Violeta Villacorta. I'm a Peruvian-born, New York-raised designer focusing on sustainable design. And I've been designing eco-friendly clothing and accessories since about 1993. And I started ORG by Vio, or Org by Vio, back in 2010 after leaving Patagonia to work with communities that are affected by the oil, the wood, lumber, and mass agriculture in the rainforest as an alternative for them to selling trees and to be able to also keep their beautiful ancestral art alive and continue it through the younger generations. And that's why I started ORG by Vio, basically.
So let's start out with a little bit of your personal history, where you grew up and what really, throughout the course of your years before you started Org by VO, really influenced you to embark on this journey?
So I grew up in Peru till I was 12. My dad died when we were very young. I was 9 and my siblings were younger. And my mom got a job in Wisconsin for a year to work with the University of Wisconsin on a book on sociology based on Peru and findings from her projects. And we thought we were going to be in the U.S. for a year, and we ended up moving to New York after she got hired at the UN as the civil registration expert in the UNDP department. So we moved to New York, and I went to school at the United Nations International School, where we were from a very young age involved in many global issues. And I was very focused on the environment, anti-apartheid movement, anti-nuclear movement. So it really came from all that. And it was a very rich upbringing with people from all over the world, very multicultural and very conscious about our global family in general. So it was a really beautiful upbringing that was the foundation of my work that I do today.
So you grew up with a true global perspective, it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely.
What a gift. So fast forward us. At what point did you decide to be a clothing designer? And when did you go to work at Patagonia?
So when I was about 7 or 8 or even earlier, I used to spend a lot of time in my father's engineering firm in Peru. And I spent hours like climbing on drafting tables and annoying the architects that he worked with. And I really wanted to be an architect and work with him. But he passed away, like I mentioned before. And so I was really torn, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. But I always drew little drawings of girls with their clothes since I was a tiny little kid. And at age 13, when we moved first to Wisconsin, I decided, okay, I'm going to be a fashion designer. I love to draw clothes since I was really little, so that's what I'm going to do. And then my mother got this job at the UN, and I ended up going to New York, the Mecca in this country, and it was just phenomenal for me. So I started taking courses and merchandising and marketing and illustration while I was still at the UN school when I was like 15 or 16, very young. And then fast forward, I went to FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology, and it was a great school for the creative arts, for design. And fortunately, nobody was talking about sustainability back then, so there was nothing to tie that to my other concerns, you know, with the environment and social issues from way back when. And so I ended up graduating from there and working in the industry in New York for a few companies, and then moved to Miami for a bit, had my own line, later on moved to California. And while I was writing a business plan for my clothing line, which is a slow fashion clothing line, I used Patagonia very heavily as an example of a company that is sustainable and very profitable. And I thought, why don't I just work with them for a little bit and learn something from them and then go back to what I'm doing now. And so I just cold called them. Mm-hmm. And there was a position available as senior designer for one of the lines, the surf line specifically for women. And so I ended up working there since 2003 for about 6 years almost.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you learned a lot in 6 years. Holy cow.
Yeah.
What would you say, absolutely, what did you learn at Patagonia?
You know, I had already come in with the same value system that they had. So it was a marriage of like, you know, kindred spirits with the people that were the owners. And so we were on board on so many different things. And so one of the things that I learned there was to help work with other companies and develop materials that would be more beneficial for us as a company and for the environment as well. including, organic cottons with, they were already using organic cottons, but we were blending them with tencels and other eco-friendly materials to make yarns for sweaters and knit fabrications. And we also developed nylons that were recycled and other, sports-driven garments that were made with recycled synthetics, which at the time was so amazing, and I loved working on those things. But, you know, in hindsight, now, you know, about 10 years later, we have learned that, or longer, that plastics are everywhere in our water systems, in our bodies even. There's 83% of microplastics in all tap water in the world. So those kinds of things were really interesting back then. It was such a wonderful material to work with. And, you know, thinking that we were doing recycled plastic bottles and making them into fabrics and all these fills that we used inside jackets was really wonderful. So that was one of the things that was exciting, to be able to develop and learn how to actually work with different companies and labs to be able to create materials that were more beneficial at the time. And then also another thing that was wonderful to see was, having come out of other corporate companies, Patagonia was more like a family. People there are friendly, and it feels more like a school. So to me, that was a kind of a new thing. You know, I felt like I was back at the UN school with my friends working, and they really are interested in keeping the employees happy. So we have an organic cafeteria where we had vegan options. There's a daycare center there that has most of the people that have babies, they go in and the daycare from ages 0 to about 5. And they promote two-child subsidies. So if you have a third child, then you pay the full price of the daycare at the offices, at the headquarters, which is pretty great. I mean, they're really concerned about population. So that was really interesting to learn that they were very aware of that fact as well. And then another thing that I really loved about Patagonia, and coming from fashion where you're advertising product, they never advertise product. They advertise the cause or some kind of call to action to vote. And it always, interestingly enough, generated more sales for the company. So that was really interesting to see, that they were really authentic about their message. But it wasn't really about selling, but it was about educating and having people have more information to be able to make better choices for themselves as people.
Well, just in that little bit of information, we could talk for hours. But what I would really like to focus on is this whole idea that is really coming to the forefront about microplastics. Can you share with our listeners what that means? Where the heck are these microplastics coming from, and why is it a problem?
Well, microplastics, plastics in general, you know, in the early 1900s were an amazing invention, and it has, you know, It's in everything that we do, in our cars, in our medical tools, in our clothing, in our electronics, everywhere. So plastics have been actually a benefit to humanity in many ways, but it's made out of petroleum, and it actually has problems with leaching into water. If you're drinking out of a water bottle, and if you are wearing synthetic fabrics, they're actually being absorbed by the body. So that's very carcinogenic. It's very unhealthy for people. And also the color fastening, all the colors, the chemicals that it requires, all of that is being absorbed by our body.
And when we wash our clothes, right?
And when we wash our clothes, we actually have microfibers that are always, for the whole life of the garments, and anything that is made of a plastic material that is synthetic, knitted, woven, is actually losing fiber with every wash. And there's no process to actually collect that and keep it away from waterways. So all of this is going into rivers, into oceans, into fish, into birds, into us. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned before, 83% of all water that we drink, potable water, is contaminated with microplastics, which are about a millimeter to 5 millimeter big. So they're yeah. And even tinier particles.
Yeah, and when that gets into the environment, it only breaks down into smaller pieces of
yes.
plastic. It never biodegrades.
Correct. It never biodegrades. Mm-hmm. It's just something that stays with us forever. So plastics are really a very huge problem right now, environmentally and health-wise as well, for the health of the planet, health of wildlife, health of humans and everyone.
So mm-hmm. when you talk of sustainable design, when it comes to your company and what you do, can you explain what you mean exactly by that? Sustainable is a very, it's a word that's getting tossed around a lot, and I think because it's so common, sometimes we don't know all that that means or what's behind that.
Yes, absolutely. And sustainable design in general, and true real sustainable design, means having the whole life of a product in mind. The grave, you want to produce something that is cradle to cradle, a piece of garment, an electronic that could be recycled. It's part recycled, or clothing, you can recycle the fibers and remake it. Or in the case of the jewelry that the artisans that I work with through ORG by Vio, they make everything out of base materials that they actually collect, harvest, and sometimes grow within their plots, in their houses, in their homes, in their gardens, and harvest them. And so it's all sustainable in small amounts, and they make everything with the plant-based materials or plant-based dyes to dye the seeds, dye the wood, the fabrics, whatever it is that we're working with at the time. And that is one of the ways, you know, that is sustainable. But yes, you're right. I mean, the word is thrown around for anything and everything, and it's not necessarily always sustainable. There's t-shirt companies that are using that name, and it's possibly made out of organic cotton, but then is it being dyed with chemicals that are actually harmful? Is it, you know, what are the other ramifications of these things? So yes, the word sustainability is used all the time, and sometimes it's not truly sustainable. So with ORG by Vio, we work to help these talented women and communities to promote and make beautiful works of wearable art with materials that, if for some reason it breaks, the seeds, you know, eventually will biodegrade. You might be able to use those materials to make something else later on, but at least it's biodegrading.
We're having some connection issues here, so about halfway through anyway. So we will take a quick music break and stay tuned. We'll be right back with Vio. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Today we're speaking with Violeta Villacorta. She's the founder of ORG by Vio. Hi, Vio, again.
Hi, Carol.
You were just talking about all the beautiful seeds and items that are integrated into your designs. Can you share with us a little bit about how you go about your design process?
Sure. With ORG by VO, a lot of the designs that we bring to market are actually original, authentic designs by the artisans. And because they're already beautiful works of art, and I prefer to actually work with them with something that is truly authentic. But of course, we have a more discerning clientele, and they want something that is more modern, maybe less ethnic. And so a lot of times I will work on designs that are more modern, simplistic, minimalist, not simplistic, but minimalist, instead of more embellished, as they tend to most of the time make things. So I will do research as to what materials we want to use in terms of the seeds, and what would be most, minimalist and modern and subdued in color. Because a lot of times they also use colored beads. And so I will, I love, of course, seeing what other people are doing just to see the market. But truly what I like to do is something that is, it's sort of channeled by the seeds themselves and the place that I am at when I work with the artisans. And a lot of times when I go there, when I travel there, we work closely on developing designs. And through the time that I've been working with them, I also help them set up emails, email accounts and bank accounts and computer areas for them to be able to communicate without having to actually travel there. So a lot of times I will sketch out some designs in my, you know, we live all over the continent, so wherever we may be at the time. And then I send those over email. I call them up. I let them know that I have actually sent them some new designs. They go and fetch them either in the nearest town, or if they have connection within their community, they'll download the designs, and then they'll start making these products, these beautiful jewelry pieces. And then once they're done, they actually ship them via Lima or Ecuador, depending on the artisans that I'm working with, which are usually in Peru and Ecuador, and they get shipped out here. So it's a really interesting process, because, you know, it's not like you can, it's not like working with any other company I've worked with, or in my own businesses where, you know, I design and I work with the sewers right there. It's a really a work of trust and a labor of love and a lot of patience between each other, because they live in a completely different way than we do. They work in very different ways than we do. And when they develop these collections, they are actually doing them from about noon to nighttime, while they're also taking care of their kids. And before noon, they wake up around 4 a.m, and then they go and work in their land. They have plots of land where they grow fruits and coffee and all kinds of things. And they can only do this between a certain amount of time. So from about 6 a.m. to noon, they're working in their land, and then they come back home while they're taking care of their kids. And in between, they're actually making these things for our collection. So it's they can actually do it at home. And they also have a center where they work with other artisans, an artisanal center that some of these communities luckily have these spaces where they can work together. But if they want, they can work with their children at home or have their children at these centers as well. So it's a very, very family-oriented way of working.
And the communities that you are working with, how did you find them? How did you find partners and artisans?
So sometimes in between design work, I would work with organizations that are doing work within the environment and social indigenous rights issues. And one of them is Amazon Watch, based in San Francisco and LA, and they connected me with the first community, the Cofán. I actually met Emergildo Criollo, the leader at the time of the Cofán community in Ecuador, in Dureno, at the screening of Avatar at James Cameron's office in Santa Monica. And I was very interested in doing this work already, and so I told him I wanted to visit, and I wanted to meet with him and the communities, and possibly work on sustainable collect, help them contribute and keep their livelihood alive, their artistry alive, and create a market for them outside of their remote communities. And so he invited me to his community, and a month later, this was in April, and a month later in May, I was with the Kofan working for a week just to see what it is that they needed to start developing something together. So that was the first community. And when I did this, I came back to the U.S. I did a Kickstarter. Kickstarter was just starting back then. It was 2010. And I did a Kickstarter and raised $17,000 to be able to buy all the things that they required, including building this artisanal center in their traditional style with thatched roofs and bamboo and a dirt ground, packed dirt ground. And anyway, so this Kickstarter also allowed me to connect with a lot of other people that were interested in similar things. And while I was in Peru for a visit, I'm from Peru, I was visiting family, I was invited to a conference between sustainable business owners and indigenous people working in the Amazon rainforest in Peru to create projects and businesses with communities that would be beneficial for the protection of the rainforest. So that's how it started.
And tell us a little bit about the clothing that you're currently working with. Is it simply jewelry, or are you venturing out into other products as well?
Well, I actually been working within my design field for many years, over 20 years. And in that period, I've worked on my own collections, worked with other companies, and started doing the Amazon jewelry in 2010. So the clothing is a slow fashion line that is made with natural fibers, organic cottons. I started using a lot of jute burlap. I love that fiber. It's so rustic. And using raffia straw as an embroidery material, as well as other hemp and other sustainable fibers as well that are natural and organic. And so that's one of the lines that I work with. And I work with clients directly, or I will make a piece or have one of the talented artisans here in the U.S. that embroider help me with embroidery. And so they're a lot of times one-offs, one-of-a-kind pieces. And while we were living in Idlewild in California, I was living up in the mountains and I wanted to do something creative. I didn't want to have to come down the mountain too much. And so I opened a shop where I showcased some of my clothing line, my clothing pieces that I designed, and also the Amazon jewelry, as well as a lot of other designer friends who make extremely gorgeous, sustainable, recycled jewelry made out of recycled brass, recycled coppers, also ethically sourced wools. I'm a vegan, so I usually have a hard time with any type of animal-based product. However, I had a collection from a friend, Famina, who makes jewelry, leather jewelry made with recycled scraps from the leather industry. She's a vegetarian and she didn't like all the waste from these companies, so she started making eco-friendly recycled leather jewelry. So at the Sage and the Butterfly, I had about 34 lines. Two of them were my own lines, the clothing and the Amazon jewelry, plus the other lines that I carried.
So slow fashion, that's kind of a new word. Explain for our listeners, what exactly do you mean in reference to slow fashion? I mean, it's what's fast fashion?
Fast fashion is everything else you see out there. I mean, fast fashion is the Targets and the Walmarts and the Kmarts. And, you know, they're working on 52-week collections. Before, it was just four seasons. And still, most of the high-end couture collections are 2 to 4 seasons. But everybody else has 52 weeks of collections. So every week, there's a new collection coming out in the stores.
So we're basically talking about disposable clothing.
Exactly. A lot of that's disposable clothing. Yeah. Exactly. It's mass production. Mm-hmm. It's an overproduction of things that we truly don't need, that are disposed within months, days. Sometimes people wear it for one occasion. Yeah. And slow fashion is completely the opposite. You want to actually make things and shop for things that are made in a way that is mindful, that is not, you know, being made in these factories that are unfortunately exploiting other people and nature, but in ways that are artisanal, that are handcrafted, that are made, that take longer to make, and that are made of high quality, so they are long lasting.
So Vio, we have about a minute left. Can you tell I know it goes by so fast.
It does.
Can you please tell our listeners how they might find you?
You can find me through my website, violetavillacorta.com, as well as thesageandthebutterfly.com and junglebling.org. Those are the three things that I have online. And if people want to get in touch with me directly for anything, also Violeta at violetavillacorta.com.
Maybe you should spell that.
So I know. Violeta is V as in Victor, I-O-L, as in Larry, E-T-A, at Violeta, V-I-O-L-E-T-A, Villacorta, V-I-L-L-A-C-O-R-T-A.com. I know it's a mouthful.
It's a beautiful name. Thank you so much for being on Heartstock and sharing what you're doing. Really love
Thank you. Thank you so much, Carol. It's really been an honor talking with you about this very important issue, which is fashion and how to make it more sustainable.
I agree. All righty. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
New music, earworms, notable tracks, culture vectors, future classics, remarkable efforts.
What's going on here, then?
New music on America's Most Radio.
Keep tuned to this station for further information and tell your neighbors to tune in also.
Turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement.
KBMF presents Glock on This with your citizen DJ Doc Sevier.
Yeah, but the question is more, how do you count?
This is your citizen DJ Doc Sevier with your new music program. Coming up this week, we have new tracks from Dim Atlas, Elvis Costello and the Imposters, Kurt Vile, but we're going to start out with Outrageous Cherry. We have a re-release of their album, Meet Me in the Shadows. We're going to hear a track called Creep's Retreat. Thanks for tuning in to your community radio station. We'll be here for a half hour. Stay tuned.
Creep's Retreat, soldiers of the runner, exposed to skies to speak.